Coming up on this week's show, Paramount Plus gobbles up more soccer rights, our review of the new Pelé documentary from Netflix, NBC finally pays attention to Leicester this season, news about more soccer leagues coming to streaming, find out how to win a $100 gift certificate to World Soccer Shop, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. I'm Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, joined alongside my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. And we're getting breaking news right now as we're recording this on Wednesday night. Most people listening to this, it'll be on Thursday or maybe even Friday. But big news coming out, and that is that Paramount Plus is... It's a war, Kartik. We talked about it last week or the week before, like 2 weeks ago, about the streaming wars of 2021 and how the big players, the big media giants, the Disneys, the ESPNs, the CBS or Viacom,
yeah.
NBC, Paramount, etc., are looking to soccer to acquire those rights and move most of those games to streaming and some television for sure. But I'll have you kick it off in terms of just talking about the latest news that just broke.
Yes, Viacom striking hard with Paramount Plus, which we know launches next month, and we've seen lots of promotion of it. And in fact, anytime you log into CBS All Access, they make you get rid of the cursory reminder that they're becoming Paramount Plus in early March before you can go on and watch other things. Well, just before we began to record, Chris, the news broke, and both you and I are awaiting the press release in our inbox. So we don't even – this is how hot off the press it is. Via Twitter, we learned that Paramount Plus has acquired the rights for the U.S. market to the Brasileiro, to the Argentine League, to the CONCACAF Nations League, and to CONCACAF qualifiers that are not hosted by the U.S. and Mexico. Remember, their deal is separate and handled through Soccer United Marketing. So this also means that there will be no complaints about BN this time, because it seems like every time we go through U.S. Men's World Cup qualifying, people are complaining about BN having matches against the Hondurases, the El Salvadors, the Canadas, the Panamas, etc. This time, those matches will be on Paramount Plus. They will be more accessible to the masses. And this is a lethal strike. Obviously, ESPN is the kind of the incumbent, the leader in the clubhouse, if you want to use a golf analogy. But this is a late charge on the back nine for Paramount Plus. This puts them in the game big time, and I think clearly establishes them, Chris, as the number two in terms of soccer content in the United States behind ESPN, and it's going to be quite a battle. NBC is left way behind.
Yeah, so just to recap, so it's the English language rights to the qualifiers for CONCACAF leading up to World Cup 2022 for those games outside the U.S. and Mexico. So in the past, it would have been, you mean, the USA against Trinidad or USA against Costa Rica, etc. Those games, and you're right, Kartik, those games oftentimes, almost always, were on beIN Sports. And then you've also got the qualifiers too for the women CONCACAF qualifiers for the 2023 Women's World Cup, which will be hosted by Australia and New Zealand. So you've got a chance to watch a lot of those U.S. women's national team games, in addition to the English language broadcast of the Argentine League, which is the Argentine Primera Division, and the Brasileiro, which is the Brazilian League, again English language. So the Brazilian League and the Argentine League, you've got your River, your Boca, you've got your Flamengo, you've got your Sao Paulo, etc., Corinthians, Grêmio. I mean, there's some big heavyweights there. But those, we know that there is interest. There is an avid fan base among soccer fans in the U.S. and neutrals that are interested in that. It's not going to be record-breaking numbers for CBS by any means, but it's nice pickups. It increases the wealth of streaming leagues and competitions that they have. But really, I mean, the big one is the U.S. men and the U.S. women. And it makes you wonder, Kartik, or it makes me wonder, if based on this one development, if CBS would actually go after the Major League Soccer rights, right? Because we know that the MLS rights are combined with the U.S. Men and women. They're coming up for bids next year, in probably the latter half of 2022. We'll know by that point who will have the rights. And CBS, based on this, I think that's a good indication that they'll go for it, at least try to get those rights or a portion of those rights. What do you think?
Yeah, I absolutely think that they're in the mix for the MLS rights. We neglected to mention NWSL, obviously. I think that was a given. NWSL and Champions League and Europa League, and then obviously the UEFA Conference League, which starts next season. Those were givens, right? That's already those are already on CBS. UEFA Conference League is launching next season because that is actually the natural beginning of the new television deal. Remember, what CBS is airing now was part of Turner's deal. So their actual the contract that they bid for and won would begin next year with this new competition, and also the Conference League. NWSL will also be on Paramount Plus. But I think they're absolutely a player for MLS. I've kind of thought that for a while now. This is a big move. Now that they've secured CONCACAF rights, they're going to continue to have NWSL rights. Argentina and Brazil give them more kind of content for cosmopolitan football fans, cosmopolitan soccer fans. But for the core American fan, they have NWSL, and now they have CONCACAF, a lot of CONCACAF competitions, international competitions. So MLS is potentially a natural fit, or some portion of the MLS deal. We know MLS won't go completely behind a paywall on one network, or we at least assume that.
Yeah, and we know that they're trying to get the Serie A rights, the Italian Serie A rights. Yeah. Whether they'll get that or not, we won't know. We'll find out in the next few weeks whether or not they're able to get it, or if ESPN renews it, or if somebody else gets it for next season onwards. And then there's the Premier League rights that we know they're up for bid, and those will be coming up soon. We should know by the summer at the latest who those rights will go to. And there's always other rights available too. So this is a huge shot from the bow by Paramount Plus. I think for some people who are thinking like, it's going to be ESPN. ESPN's going to be gobbling up everything. Well, here's an indication of how serious Paramount Plus is. And if you have CBS All Access, it will automatically change over to Paramount Plus on March 4th. You don't have to do anything. You'll be able to log in with your CBS All Access login details. But this is a big story, Kartik, and I'm sure we'll be hearing more and more from CBS regarding this in the coming days. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of coverage at worldsoccertalk.com. Kartik, so big news this week also was the new documentary that was released on Tuesday. It's called Pelé. It's available exclusively from Netflix. And it's a little bit long. It's an hour and 45 minutes. But I know you do. I do too. I mean, we both love documentaries. What did you think about this one?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I mean, it's difficult not to compare it to the Maradona documentary that came out a year and a half ago now. The premiere was here in Miami, and so it was September of 2019. So yeah, it's pretty fresh off the presses, and obviously in the interim period Maradona has passed away. So I'm a little cloudy because I'm viewing it through that lens. And I, as a documentary, I think it was well done. It tried to really tell the story of what Pelé meant to Brazil in the context of 1958. You know, 1950, they lose the World Cup final, or that wasn't the final, but they lose. They didn't get the result they needed against Uruguay in the final match at the Maracanã to win the World Cup. So Uruguay wins the World Cup on Brazilian soil. A big rival wins on Brazilian soil. And kind of the view of Pelé through the lens of nationalism, and then particularly after 1964, and that government is in power in Brazil, the lens of nationalism. And the thing that I find, since we're talking about Pelé and Maradona, and those are the natural comparisons, and I'm also comparing documentaries, I think the thing that I can appreciate coming out of this documentary is that Maradona was incredibly political, right? He was incredibly outspoken about issues and politics and American imperialism and those sorts of themes and socialism, right? He was a socialist. He was a classic Latin American socialist, and he wore that on his sleeves, and that kind of followed him in Italy at Napoli. And it just interestingly enough, I was just watching CNN's documentary in the Stanley Tucci Italy series that they're doing, and he starts in Napoli, and I'm watching that, and he's talking about margherita pizza, and I'm thinking about Maradona because it's Napoli, right? So Pelé doesn't quite elicit that level of emotion from me.
I think it's different though, because it's one of those things that the Maradona documentary, which you, if you haven't seen it, it's called, I think it's called Maradona, right? Or Diego Maradona. It's available on HBO Max. But the unique thing about that one, to me, it's completely different. The unique thing about that one was that they had footage, which was unbelievable. They had so much footage behind the scenes. It's almost as if like the film crew for that one said, okay, let's go back in time to like 1986 and onwards. And anywhere Maradona goes, Diego goes, we'll bring a camera and we'll record things, behind the scenes things. And with Pelé and other superstars, you know, I mean, there's, I mean, that didn't happen with Maradona. So there was that basically with Maradona, they had that footage. With Pelé, they don't. So it's a different type of documentary. I mean, to me, this is more about really the story of Brazil, the story of the country itself and the political change and how Brazil was put on the map through soccer and how so many of us view Brazil through the lens of soccer. I mean, if Brazil had never been a world power in soccer, what would our thoughts be about that country? We probably know very little about it for the most part. I mean, the average person. And that's how I view this one. It is different. To me, it was a joy seeing Pelé. I mean, we don't get to see him that much anymore on television. Anytime we do see him in the last, say, decade, it's often a sponsorship opportunity, whether it's Subway or, I don't know, Visa back in the 1994 World Cup. I mean, it's usually kind of a very unnatural setting. And this was really interesting, watching him talking to his friends, having lunch, and showing his emotions. And actually, watching a lot of footage of these different World Cups that he played in at the same time that he's watching it. He's in a room watching the footage, and we're watching him watching the footage. It's a very voyeuristic aspect, and that I enjoyed because you can see him getting choked up. You can see him kind of holding his head. I'm like, and we're seeing that and seeing the game too at the same time. I thought that was really well done in terms of that technique.
Yeah, that reminded me a lot of Soccer Box, which is the show that Gary Neville hosts on Sky, where he'll sit with Ian Wright or whoever, Ryan Giggs, and they'll watch an old match. One of the things, though, one of the reasons I bring up the whole Maradona documentary is because this was effectively a documentary about Brazil and how we view Brazil, and I completely agree with that. 2 points. One is about Maradona. In the sit-down footage with Maradona and just the archival footage of Maradona, he's so anxious to talk about politics. Whereas these sit-downs with Pelé, right, which are real-time, right, which are now, he's kind of dancing around everything. And I think he knows deep down inside, you can see it in his face, that he was used a bit as a pawn at that time. To promote Brazil and promote the government, particularly, as I said, after 64, particularly in the 70 World Cup, which was arguably the greatest international side of all time. It wasn't just him, but that team. So I thought about India when I watched that portion, because I was thinking, you know what, India now has modernized and is now a rapidly developing nation and economic power. But for most of my lifetime, or at least half of my lifetime, my childhood, the only thing anybody knew about India was if they were a cricket fan.
Yep.
They would have no interest or knowledge of India outside of being a cricket fan. And those were mostly English people, right, and Australians. So I thought about that in the context of Brazil as I'm watching this. It's like, you know, that's how India used to be viewed. A lot of us would not care about Brazil at all. A lot of people in the West, in Western Europe and in the United States would not even think about Brazil if it wasn't for football. So I kind of related to me as a person of Indian origin because I think that's the way India was very much viewed until recently. It was viewed completely through the context of cricket and maybe Bollywood movies if people were interested in that.
Right. And Gandhi. And that's
right.
About,
right.
Right. But that's the thing, though, about this film. I thought it was a little bit unfair on Pelé, where they made that argument, where they had the journalists saying that Pelé's meeting with the president, Medici, and meeting with these figureheads and these dictators put him into a scenario where he should have said something. He should have, either opposed meeting with them or did something, and instead he was silent. To me personally, I think that was a little bit unfair, just because, I mean, he's one person. Yes, he has an enormous influence, but if he had chosen not to go to meet with the president or the dictator, which he may have done at times, he may have decided not to actually meet with them, but, I mean, it was a publicity stunt for the dictator. I think Pelé was kind of in a difficult situation where if he had said no, he probably seems to be very humble. He probably would not want to make a big fuss about it and would probably just say, okay, well, I said no, and no's a no, and I'm not going to have a press conference about it. I'm not going to go ahead and write an article or have someone interview me about it. So I just thought it was difficult. He was in a difficult situation anyway, given the prominence that he had. I was okay. Personally, I was okay in terms of what he did, which is concentrating on as a professional athlete. And that was the thing about this documentary. It really shined a light on the immense pressure and expectations put on him, not only just by the government and the dictators wanting Brazil to win, of course, because it made them look good, but also by the people, the fans, the country, the media. Immense pressure on this one individual to kind of try to stay sane, rise above it, which he did. I think it's worth watching, definitely. I really enjoyed this one, Kartik.
Yeah, and I think the takeaway, I completely agree with what you just said, and that was going to be my last takeaway on the film, was that there's a feeling that Pelé was trapped. Right, because the politicians are trying to use him. He's such an important instrument of nationalism, and I know this again coming from an Indian culture where, although my parents are very so Americanized, maybe more so than me, they don't see it that in developing nations you need to have some degree of nationalism and national pride as a source of unity and a source of togetherness and pushing forward. I mean, I think the concept of nationalism in the developing world is very different than in the West, which I can appreciate, again, coming from an Indian background, even though my parents have become very Americanized with that and kind of look down on Indian nationalism. I don't. I appreciate Pelé and that 1970 World Cup team as an instrument of Brazilian pride, Brazilian nationalism. And unfortunately, you had a not so great political situation in the country, but he was very much a prisoner of it. Now, it's easy for me to say, sitting in the United States, sitting as kind of a lefty person in the United States, how much I love Maradona and appreciate everything he did. And then, you know, Pelé, he sold out. I'm not going to make that judgment, right? I understand it's difficult. Yes, I appreciate Maradona's politics more, but that does not mean that that Pelé did anything wrong. I think it was just a circumstance. It was the moment, and you're talking about an entire nation's expectation based around him. And keep in mind, he's of African descent. Keep in mind, he's black. That makes it much more difficult, maybe, to take a very principled stand. And I think that that's something you can't forget in all of this.
Yeah, this one was different than I thought it would be, though. I had no expectations
me
going
too.
In there.
I thought it was going to be about his playing career.
Me too.
That's what I did when I turned it on last night.
Me too. And it starts off that way. It starts off in the beginning, saying, like, you know, he was born in 1940 from a poor environment. And starts, and then it's him starting to tell the story about his father and his parents and his sister and et cetera, and how his dad was a footballer. And I thought, which I was fine by that, with that. But then it takes a turn. Then it does get political. It does get heavy. But to me, at the end of the day, this is a side of the Pelé story that I've never seen before. This is something new. I mean, we've read about, we've heard about, written about Pelé throughout his lifetime as a professional footballer. And this was different. So, yeah, full credit to the filmmakers. If you get a chance, check it out. It's on Netflix. Like I said, it is a little bit long. It looks a little bit slow in places. But if you really want to enrich your knowledge of Pelé and see a different side to the story and learn more about Brazil and the changes, which I wasn't aware of, the changes in the 64 and onwards. Really, really highly recommended. Now, Kartik, as far as what we watched from this past week, of course, we mentioned Pelé. If there's anything else that stood out, one thing I do want to mention is, I mean, to me, Danny Higginbotham is the star of the show at NBC Sports. Yep. Not only because of his knowledge, but he has a really fresh approach. So for me, it's been years and years of listening to the two Robbies. Both of them are great guys, very knowledgeable. But when they talk, sometimes it seems robotic. It seems that, I mean, we've heard those things before where they're talking about being in the dressing room and the feeling that they get before a big match and, I mean, whatever the instance is. We've heard those stories so many times, and their analysis to me has become predictable. It's not that it's bad, it's just it's predictable. And this past weekend was another example of just how good Danny Higginbotham was, particularly on a topic that's near and dear to your heart, Kartik.
Yeah, so finally, someone in the media stood up and said, you know what, Leicester City's been ravaged by injuries, and it's amazing the job Brendan Rodgers has done, because this has been my frustration, and I hit my boiling point, as I mentioned last week on the podcast, with NBC in whenever Liverpool played Leicester the previous time, the first time in late October, early November, when they spent a half an hour on Van Dijk being out and this Liverpool guy and that Liverpool guy, not even mentioning that Leicester had half their 11 out for that match, including Ndidi, who I consider as influential, if not more so than Vardy. In fact, James Maddison may have been out for that match also, now that I think about it. We know how good he is. So finally, someone talked about the job Rodgers has done when the majority of Leicester's preferred 11, in fact, almost everyone, not the majority, the almost everybody in what you would consider Rodgers' preferred 11 outside of the goalkeeper, or sort of the preferred 10 in the field, has missed at least four Premier League matches with injury. Now, as badly as Liverpool has been decimated by injuries, and I agree with some of the people who push back on me, I have to concede that point, that, yeah, maybe some of it is that it's all in one position for Liverpool, or it's all in two positions, right? Central midfield and central defense, so it's right in the spine. Mm-hmm. But I don't think any other club in the Premier League has had 9 out of their 10 top players in the field, you know, miss 4 matches or more. That's where Leicester City is, and they're sitting 3rd in the table. So I'm glad Danny Higginbotham stepped up and said that, gave that to the American audience who has not heard that on NBC before, has not heard it on Sky, has only seen it from my tweets, which, you know, I have some followers on Twitter, but not nearly as many as people who watch NBC. And then also was appreciated the fact that for some reason, maybe they're watching the U.S. coverage, Max Rushton picked up on that point on Monday on the Guardian Football Weekly podcast, and then started talking about, my gosh, you know, Leicester, this is amazing, considering how many guys they've had injured throughout the course of this season, that they're doing so well, even though that had been glossed over before. I mean, Football Weekly has talked more about Leicester than NBC has or Sky has, but still, mm-hmm. they've glossed over the injuries. So really props to Danny Higginbotham. And he's saved NBC's coverage this season, because I think we had come to the conclusion, and believe it or not, Chris, I know we've gotten a lot of pushback, and we've talked about this before, but now I've noticed on Twitter, anytime I say something critical of NBC, there are more people agreeing with me than ever. The loss of Kyle Martino, the loss of Steve Bauer, the loss of Neil Ashton, it's all had a cumulative effect where their coverage has been largely unwatchable, their bumper programming. And now a big comeback this week with Danny Higginbottom, a big comeback the last several weeks with him, although they will lose him at some point to the Philly Union when MLS season starts. And also one other quick note, Micah Richards' conversation on racism. If you didn't check that out, hopefully there's a way you can see it on NBCSports.com because it was fantastic. That was at that followed the Monday match, the Crystal Palace Brighton match.
All right, let's look ahead to this weekend. As far as recommendations, I think last weekend I had the Merseyside derby, which paid off, right? First win for Everton in more than a decade. And then I think you had the Inter game, which was, if I remember correctly, anyway, that was a good game too, but definitely Inter putting the foot down and definitely leading the charge. Now, looking into this weekend, I'm going Kartik with Chelsea against Manchester United on Sunday, 11:30 kickoff on NBCSN, and Chelsea looking really good under Tuchel, and of course Manchester United flying like crazy too. So I think this should be a really interesting match between two sides that are not going to be your Jose Mourinho parking the bus. I think this will be a little bit more open and back and forth. So I think this will be a good one to watch. What about you? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Roma-Milan. Milan now kind of teetering on the brink. They've been punching above their weight this season. There were some moments in the derby on Sunday where when it was 1-0, really, beginning of the second half, where it looked like they might get back into the match. Ibra had a chance. Normally he would bury. But I think they're teetering on the brink of collapsing, potentially. Roma is one of the teams that could potentially take advantage of that and put themselves in the title race if they can win this match. So that's Sunday, 2:45 p.m. on ESPN+.
All right, let's move on to TV streaming news. And in addition to the news that we've already announced in the first segment about Paramount Plus getting a lot more rights, coming this May, Paramount Plus will premiere the documentary series entitled Sir Alex Ferguson, Never Give In, which tells the story of the legendary manager. There's been some clips circulating, I think, on social media that show kind of a trailer for this. And it looks really, really good. And just one of the most fascinating stories in world football, really, from his days in Scotland as a player, as well as the testing ground in Scotland as a manager, achieving incredible results with Aberdeen, and then, of course, moving to Manchester United. That one I'm looking forward to. Also, Paramount Plus will bring fans a new documentary series called Stories from the Beautiful Game, which is produced by Pete Radovich, who is the top CBS Sports producer for the UEFA Champions League and a person we've interviewed quite a few times for World Soccer Talk. So there's two more things to look forward to, and there may be more in the future too, Kartik. Now,
yeah.
Go ahead, like Kartik, you've got a piece of news too, so go ahead.
Oh yeah, so I'm hearing from two sources. One says it's confirmed. One says it's likely. So take that for what it's worth, and maybe you'll know by the time you listen to this podcast that it looks like the March 6th Dortmund Bayern match. This is the match that'll be at the Allianz, right? They've already played this earlier this season at Dortmund. Will be moved to ABC. It's a 12:30 p.m. U.S. kickoff, U.S. Eastern Time kickoff, 6:30 Central European Time. It's the premier game of that weekend. Had been wondering why we hadn't seen any more Bundesliga matches on linear television. Looks like they were waiting for this. So might be official by the time you hear this, March 6th. It appears like ESPN will move that, or ESPN networks will move that match to ABC.
In other news, Fanatis, the streaming service, has added Central America TV, which is a Central American TV station, which means that Fanatis, in addition to having beIN Sports and Gol TV, the Argentine League in Spanish, the Brazilian League in Portuguese, etc., they will now also have games for El Salvador, Honduras, and Costa Rica. those national leagues exclusively on Fanatis. So check that out if you haven't done so. And then in the news section, last but not least, we want to know how we're doing. So in terms of the podcast, what you like, what you don't like, what are your favorite segments, etc. So we want to hear from you. We want to find out how we're doing. So at the end of this podcast, we'll include the link to go ahead. Well, I'll mention it now. So if you go to worldsoccertalk.com and go to the homepage, you'll see on the banner ads on the side, on the sidebar, there's a big banner ad in yellow that says, tell us how we're doing. And if you enter, you've got a chance of winning a $100 gift card from World Soccer Shop. So $100 gift card from World Soccer Shop. So if you want to, you can buy your that favorite football shirt that you've always been wanting to buy, scarves, hats, gear, merchandise, whatever it may be. So go ahead and enter the survey and let us know how we're doing. And by filling out the survey, you will be automatically entered into the drawing where one lucky person will get a $100 gift card from World Soccer Shop. What about you, Kartik? Do you have anything on your wish list as far as any shirts? What about that Paisley Manchester City away shirt or third shirt? That
so the commentary about that shirt again on Sunday was or Saturday, whenever the Arsenal match was Sunday. Was tremendous. I mean, I there's some strange things that Puma has produced for Manchester City. I'm not even sure what that is, but it must have some sort of following because it is soliciting conversation, I suppose.
Yeah, when I saw that, I mean, I've seen it many times, but this past weekend reminded me of that shirt. But anytime I see that, I always think back to, say, the footballers from the 1970s or 80s. What they would, if they were able to go into a time machine and go to the 2021 and see that shirt, what their reaction would be, because that is just so different than, say, football shirts or soccer shirts from back in the day. So actually it's a nice design, but I'm sure, I'm knowing you, Kartik, you'll have something else on your list, not that one.
No, none of that one. Correct.
All right, moving on to TV ratings. Some big numbers from this past week, which is great news. And first up is the Barcelona PSG round of 16 match. The first leg there, it was on Univision and TUDN in Spanish language. That game averaged 1.07 million viewers to become the most watched Champions League round of 16 game ever on US television, regardless of language. It was also on CBS Sports Network, but those numbers are not available. But over 1 million people tuning in to watch that game, which was a 3 o'clock kickoff during office hours on a weekday. So great numbers there. And Kartik, there's some good numbers too for the US women's national team.
Yeah, some outstanding numbers, which also we have to put in the context of the men's numbers we talked about a few weeks ago, right? And this is just a very straight-up comparison. FS1 on Sunday evening, U.S. Women's National Team versus Brazil in the She Believes Cup, 568,000 viewers, 498,000 on Thursday night on FS1 for the U.S. Women's National Team against Canada. Compare this to the Sunday mid-afternoon good time slot where the U.S. got whatever that number was against Trinidad and Tobago.
Like 270,000, right?
Yeah. And you could say, oh, well, this is the She Believes Cup, but it's really – they're really kind of friendlies too. So and in fact, they had to – they had to alter the tournament at the last minute because Japan wasn't able to travel. So Argentina was invited, and that kind of changed the schedule a little bit. But great numbers, fantastic numbers. And I think, again, and we've talked about this a little bit even with when CBS showed NWSL matches over the air during the fall, that those numbers are very comparable, if not better than a lot of MLS numbers on linear television. And now we're seeing it with the women's national team, clearly better numbers if you go like for like versus the men's national team. The women don't have the kind of qualifying process that the men do, which is why I've found for so long the arguments of people who are defending unequal pay and the men making more money was so disingenuous anyways, because the process is different for qualifying for the women. So they would always talk about, oh, well, the men's qualifier against Mexico got 3 million viewers, most of whom were probably watching because of Mexico. But this is a like-for-like comparison, more of a like-for-like comparison. We're seeing the women's national team far more popular than the men's national team right now, holding much more interest among just average American soccer fans.
When the U.S. failed to beat Trinidad and Tobago to qualify for the 2018 World Cup, we did a podcast immediately the day after, and I think at that point we called it the darkest hour in U.S. soccer history. And I just wonder, Kartik, as far as not qualifying for the 2018 World Cup, I mean, this obviously has had some significant damage on the morale and the support for the men's team. And I just wonder how many years it's going to take to get it back to where it was before. And even qualifying, if they do, for the 2022 World Cup, which we hope they will, it still could be a setback unless they actually progress further and do better than what they've done in the past. I think it's just a huge step backwards, missing out on the 2018 World Cup.
Yeah, and I don't think that it recovers that quickly. I mean, there's been a lot of propaganda of late saying, well, this is some sort of golden generation of American players, and they're going to be better than ever. So that was a step back, but we're going to be stronger than ever coming back. There's absolutely no evidence of that at the international level. And yes, we have some top Americans playing at big clubs. Weston McKennie has been playing phenomenally for Juventus of late. Pirlo has figured out how to use him. But beyond him, no, I think there's still a lot more. There's still a lot of question marks about just about every other American player in the men's national team pool beyond McKennie right now, if you ask me. So, yeah, it could be a long time. And I think the women captured the imagination of casuals and non-soccer fans in this country in a way that the U.S. men probably never will.
Yeah, and it keeps on building. I mean, with the women continuing to win the Women's World Cup, that fan base continues to grow, as does the popularity of women's soccer, too. Next up is listener mailbag. RJ goes first. He says, I've noticed you mentioned the requirement for over-the-air broadcasters to air youth-oriented programming and also public affairs programming. Is that a weekend morning requirement, or is that just when the networks prefer to do it due to lower than normal viewership figures in that time frame?
He's correct. It's a requirement that they air a certain number of hours a week, and that's why they do it in those time periods, because that's when there's lower than usual viewership. But that's why I think it's difficult to show live sports regularly. Obviously, we've seen exceptions where NBC has shown final Premier League match of the season at 10 a.m. or Wimbledon back in the days when it was on NBC. They would show, well, French Open still, they would show at 9 a.m. And the Open Championship from the UK on ABC, now on NBC. But generally, you don't want to have to move that stuff into a time slot where you would get higher ratings with even like program reruns. So that's why. So yeah, that's a very good question, RJ. I should have explained that better previously. But it's not a requirement that they show it on Sunday morning or on Saturday morning. It's just when it happens, because that's when you need to fill the time.
Soccer Heretic says, I want to make a counterpoint about the difference between paywall anger at Peacock and CBS, but not at ESPN. I think it has more to do with the way ESPN's soccer audience has been conditioned over the course of years about how its platform is operated, and most of the leagues they're bringing in never have been on linear TV, or there have been unfettered access previously to leagues. ESPN Plus has always presented this content as Tier 3 properties through their streaming platform. NBC and CBS have newer streaming operations of comparable size. They're having to convert fans to accepting the new normal, whereas ESPN presented it as the status quo from the beginning. Good point there, Kartik. I think there is a lot of that to it, where I think we've heard this so many times, especially with NBC's coverage of the Premier League. In the past, we had everything. I mean, if you had a cable subscription and you were able then to get NBC Sports Live Extra, you had access to every single match. And you got conditioned to having it, in quotation marks, for free with your cable subscription. Every single game, live and on demand. And then slowly but surely it changed and to where we are today, where 45% of the matches are on Peacock, and then the rest are on mostly on NBCSN, but some of them on NBC, and you're having to have two subscriptions. So now you feel that you've been cheated, whereas with Soccer Heretic mentions, I think the ESPN audience has been conditioned to see ESPN Plus as basically kind of a value add.
Yeah, I agree with that. Real quickly, I should have mentioned this earlier in the show. Another complaint about Peacock this weekend is Sunday they had all four matches back-to-back-to-back on Peacock. That's fine. What's not fine is that once the matches – you can't just put it on a stream on Peacock and it naturally go to the studio program and then to the next match, right? Yeah. You then have to exit out and then find the other stream and then go to that. So that's something if they're going to keep the Premier League rights beyond next season and they're going to do more of it on Peacock, which they will if they keep the rights, they've got to figure out. Because that's, I think, for those of us who are accustomed to keeping things on a single channel, SN, and obviously we could have done that on Saturday, right, with SN. It's very complicated.
Mm-hmm. RBO says, on Paramount Plus and other streaming services, having movies and other entertainment and maybe soccer, Serie A, it might be good for some, but I don't want all that other stuff, just soccer. Streaming services are becoming like cable satellites. To get one thing, you have to get a bundle with a whole bunch of other stuff that's non-soccer related. That's why I like ESPN Plus. I don't have to get the bundle to get sports. If CBS Paramount had the package just with soccer and the price was the same as ESPN Plus, I could see value. I'm not a streaming person, but for me to watch the Bundesliga, it was on ESPN Plus or nothing. So far, I'm happy with the service and it works with my DSL. Keep sports as a standalone package. If I was CBS, an executive, I would probably say, but RBO, the price point for Paramount Plus, CBS All Access, is the same price as ESPN Plus. But you get movies, you get TV shows, you get original programming, you get access to your local CBS, you get CBS Sports HQ. And now with this podcast, now we know that you'll get U.S. qualifiers, you'll get the Argentine League, the Brazilian League. Yes, you have to kind of hunt and peck through that content to find what you're looking for. But still, it's interesting that in some ways, kind of having something that's exclusively sports does make it a unique selling proposition. And I think maybe talking about last week's podcast, why so many people just love ESPN Plus is because in some ways it's simpler. I mean, it's less confusing. It's just they do sports and that's all they do.
And everybody's trying to react to everybody else, I think. I've noticed since Discovery Plus launched at the beginning of January, I have seen more documentaries pop up on what is now CBS All Access, what will be Paramount Plus in a couple of weeks. So I'm sure if I poked around Peacock, I'd find the same thing, right? Everybody is reacting to everybody else in this streaming universe. And maybe ESPN Plus is just a very simple niche thing that makes fans more comfortable.
Yeah, definitely a good point. Ryan Hawkins says, somehow we are about a year and a half out from the Qatar World Cup. If you and Kartik had to put together your picks for four announcer pairings and teams for Fox, who would you slot into those roles and a studio team? Any interesting unattached names that they could bring in for a major tournament as a one-off hire to bolster their coverage? And Kartik, for me personally, I'm not ready to go ahead and kind of name my recommendations of who they should get. Instead, I would say that I think it's pretty predictable that they're probably going to go with the standard set of commentators that they've been using. Fox has had budget cuts, as have a lot of the other major sports networks and studios. And I wouldn't be surprised, I could almost bet on it, that it's going to be John Strong and Stu Holden for the World Cup final, and for the opening game, and for all the U.S. men's national team games. And then you're going to have JP Della Camera doing many of the games. You're going to have Derek Ray doing many of the games, and you'll have Ali Wagner, you'll have Daniel Slayton. Pretty much the usual suspects. I don't see them going out and making any strong bids to try to bring in some top talent to bolster their coverage. To them, it's always has been and always will be about the U.S. men's national team. And I think that's their main focus. The rest of the countries, they don't really care as much about. That is their forte, and that's what they're going in with. What about you, Kartik? Could you foresee any big changes there, or any differences, perhaps?
Yeah, maybe they just mail it in and they use the English language world feed from FIFA, except for U.S. games and semifinals and finals, where they send Strong and Holton. I mean, I could see Fox doing any number of cost cutting things, especially since they are effectively out of the club game outside of MLS. And let's see. I mean, this is in November 2022. By that time, they may have lost the MLS rights. Also, it's possible. So I don't know what their level of institutional commitment is to this competition. And I saw 2019 Women's World Cup not covered from my perspective, as well as they did in 2015 with the Women's World Cup. So that to me is already a level of regression. U.S. wins both those tournaments, so it had nothing to do with the U.S.'s presence. Then I'm worried that 18 Men's World Cup, which I think for most of us was inadequate. I will admit I watched most of the World Cup in Spanish, so maybe I'm not
lucky.
The right
you.
Person to critique Fox. Yeah, right.
I had to endure my time watching it in English.
Yeah,
on Fox.
But it was not at anywhere near the level of production that and quality that we were accustomed to from ESPN. So I just think about them backsliding from there. That's would be my expectation. I think even their coverage of MLS isn't as strong as it was 2-3 years ago, and I feel bad for John Strong and Stu Holden, because I think that I know a lot of our listeners don't like them, but I think that they're very good if put in the right situation and right circumstance, and that's becoming rarer and rarer on Fox for
them. Yeah, and I like both of them. That they're not the best at what they do, but they're definitely very strong. I mean, no pun intended. John Strong is very strong, and Stu Holden's very strong too. But I think in terms of who's available in the U.S., they're two of the best at that level. You mean if you're looking for American commentators and American co-commentators, they're available. Those are two of the best. So I think that's a smart move. But for 2022 World Cup, though, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't do a studio in Qatar. They might say, hey, let's do a studio in L.A. And just do the coverage from here, and we'll have most of the people doing the commentating from a studio in Los Angeles, from the Fox studios. And maybe then we'll send out John Strong and Stu Holden for the U.S. games, and maybe send out a reporter or two. And then, I just don't see them putting a lot of money and budget into this one. I think that if anything, they're going to be saving it for the 2026 World Cup.
Yeah, and I want to remind our listeners that Fox bailed out on the U.S. Open golf, their long-term contract with the USGA in the middle of the COVID pandemic, just similar to what Turner did with Champions League, and NBC assumed the remainder of Fox's deal in addition to the next set of years after that. So that, to me, is an indication. Now, maybe things are different once the pandemic is over, that Fox was looking to scale down and cut costs as quickly as possible by dumping one of their marquee sports properties on NBC. So from Fox, dumping it from Fox and then end up on NBC. So that's something that has me worried about how they're going to produce this World Cup, especially when they see the poor ratings for the U.S. men's national team. Maybe it's just not in their interest. The only mitigating factor against that, Chris, is, of course, 2026 is in the U.S. or in North America, and maybe they want to ramp up for that. Maybe.
Yeah. But it's 4 years, though. I mean, four yeah. years is a long time. I mean, even if they put in kind of a half-assed effort for 2022 World Cup, I don't think it would damage the 2026 World Cup. If anything, I can see them putting more of an effort into the 2023 Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. And with the US having a good chance to win that one, and perhaps put more of an effort into a studio presence, etc. Lastly, David says, do you think there will be streaming options to access major international tournaments in the future? If my memory serves me correctly, Euro 2016 was shown on ESPN, and I do not think that there was a streaming option at that time like ESPN Plus. Will Euro 2020 this summer have any games accessible on ESPN Plus? Or do you think getting the traditional linear ESPN, ESPN2, etc. will be necessary? So for Euro 2020 this summer, this is going to be, I mean, the major games, we don't know how many yet, but the major games will be on ABC. So you can expect probably the opening game, probably the final, maybe a couple of other games on ABC. Most of them then would be on ESPN. Some of them would be on ESPN2. And as far as streaming goes, I'm not seeing ESPN Plus as being kind of a main thrust for this summer's competition. This is a great opportunity for ESPN to go ahead and get some big numbers on the TV side. I mean, in terms of some big TV ratings for a massive international tournament, and streaming probably would be available through ESPN3. I just see it being as a big TV push, perhaps the last big TV push for ESPN for a major European tournament like this.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind they have to fill certain programming hours for their cable providers with live sports programming on linear television, and I'm not sure. I guess they would have lost some of the end. Well, no, the NBA season did tip off before, so maybe they will get their full allotment in 2021. But I think they're going to have most of the matches, if not all the matches, on television for that reason.
Yeah,
that just in case, which is why, for instance, I know I talked about this with someone the other day that. Why were there so many Serie A matches on ESPN towards the end of last season after the restart? Because the NHL had suspended play. Well, NHL's not ESPN, sorry. The NBA had suspended play. College basketball didn't finish. They weren't sure about college football at that point, even though they ended up having at least a partial season. They showed every Serie A match they could, if you remember, for 3 or 4 weeks. We heard Brock Donaldson and Matteo Benetti every day. They were doing six, seven matches a week because they had to fill that live programming bill that they owe to cable and satellite providers. So I would expect because of COVID, and maybe they're falling short on some sports. I'm not sure if they are, but they might, given that the pandemic hasn't run its course yet. I think they'll show every match. So the streaming we're going to look at for 24 probably for the Euros.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing, though, too. Even like last season for Major League Soccer, a bunch of those games were going to be on ABC. It was going to be double headers. It was going to be, I don't know, LA Galaxy.
Oh, that's right. They lost a bunch of MLS games, too. That's part of the
reason
to show so many Serie A matches. That's right.
Exactly. It would have been like, kind of, I don't know, Italy against Poland, and then followed by, you know, LA against whoever. And those games ended up being, because those games weren't played and those games weren't shown on ABC, we ended up getting, the England-Iceland game, the qualifier for
Croatia-Portugal was on ABC.
Exactly. Some big games, but definitely not what was intended originally. So yeah, ABC, ESPN, ESPN2 is going to be the go-to place this summer. But if you are a cord cutter, I mean, those channels are available through Fubo TV and Sling Orange, just as two examples, and probably YouTube TV also, as well as Hulu Plus Live TV. There's a bunch of different streaming options, even if you are a cord cutter, to watch those games. All right, listeners, we want you to have your say. So we want to hear from you in terms of any questions you have, any feedback, any observations, any pet peeves about some of your favorite commentators or some of your favorite soccer channels, etc. Let us know. We would love to hear from you. You can always reach us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. and on Twitter at World Soccer Talk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments at worldsoccertalk.com. And then just a reminder, so if you do want to go ahead and get entered into the contest, one lucky person will get a $100 gift card from World Soccer Shop. So you can buy whatever you want to buy. Just go to worldsoccertalk.com and then click on the there's a big yellowish, greenish banner on the right sidebar that says tell us how we're doing. And feel free to give us your honest opinions about the podcast and what we can do better and what things you like. What things you don't like, etc. All right, Kartik, are we forgetting anything, or do we cover all bases on this episode?
I think we covered all bases on this episode, and I'm thinking there are going to be a lot of people excited about the Paramount Plus announcement, just to wrap up on that. And,
yeah.
And the fact that also it's going to be you're going to have some mainstream coverage of Brazil and Argentina, two leagues that I think people who have watched Copa Libertadores have been like, just in the last month, saying, you know, we wish we saw more of those leagues. So those are going to be mainstreamed now.
It does signal, though, Kartik, it does signal at some point, the end of beIN Sports. Because these are rights,
yes,
that beIN Sports,
yes,
would have been all over them in the past. They would have said, hey, English language, Brazilian, fantastic. Argentine, we'll take it. The World Cup qualifiers, we'd love to have those. And I think at this point, I know beIN Sports officially would say, we're not bidding on any rights because of piracy and how blatant piracy is around the world and how much money companies are losing from buying rights to, you know, whichever competitions they are at just huge prices when piracy is a major issue. And while that is a valid reason, I think it is masking an effort by beIN Sports overall to say, you know what, let's just keep on doing what we're doing. Let's have the Copa Libertadores. Let's go ahead and show La Liga and Liga and Copa Sudamericana. But let's keep our budgets tight and let's go all the way through till the end of the World Cup in 2022. And then maybe in early 2023, maybe at that point, then we kind of revisit our goals, because, you know, what do we do from here on? I mean, yes, they have the Spanish rights through 2024 for La Liga, but this is a warning sign, I think, for beIN Sports. For anyone that's kind of thinking that beIN Sports is going to be a player, here's a perfect example of a newbie coming in and acquiring rights that in the past beIN Sports would have been definitely trying to get, at least.
Yeah, and one of the things I didn't mention is what maybe my favorite match of the week was Niko Kovac, who you saw his final match at Bayern in person, right? When you went to that match, right, Eintracht match against Bayern a year and a half ago, really a redemption job with Monaco this season, beating PSG the other day, creating a four-way title race in France, four teams within 6 points, a Lille are top of the table right now. Really good young young Lille team with a young core with a couple of good experienced players. Because they're on beIN, no one is talking about it in this country. Everyone's kind of just, you know, glossing it over, to be honest. So I think about the French league and the ties between PSG and beIN through Qatar, et cetera, and maybe that league is going to end up being the biggest loser of all of this, because they're tied to beIN until the beIN ship goes down. Whereas La Liga, as we've talked about, maybe can get off of beIN or get at least some matches off of beIN and onto ESPN or wherever in the very near future.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea for a title name for this podcast episode, until the beIN Sports ship goes down, because I would be concerned, definitely, if I'm beIN Sports or if I work for beIN Sports, just seeing that they're not really doing what they should be doing if they're looking to really grow the network. It's almost as if they've given up, or that they don't have any big goals or initiatives at this point other than just trying to... Yes, the whole Comcast distribution and the whole DirecTV distribution really hurts them, but that we're now going on, what, a couple of years since those things have happened, and the likelihood,
yeah,
of beIN Sports being added back to those at this point is practically zero.
And I do know that they did talk to Octagon about NWSL when Octagon shopped the rights, and it obviously ended up on CBS, as we talked about earlier in the show. So they were still trying to acquire properties that they thought might get them back on the cable systems, because obviously if you have NWSL in this country, you have a very vocal supporter space that would then want to see that property on cable and not have to buy Sling or whatever to get it, or Fubo.
But that's the thing, though.
They failed at that, and I just don't think they're any more chips for them to play, honestly.
But that's the thing, though, Kartik. Imagine if today's announcement was that beIN Sports has acquired the away rights for the World Cup qualifiers, and has acquired the Brazilian rights in English as well as the Argentine rights in English. What would the reaction be among soccer fans?
Anger.
Yeah. They'd be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe beIN Sports. They suck. I don't have any access to them. I can't get it. Nobody has it. And yet Paramount Plus, yes, they are a streaming service, but beIN Sports is available probably, absolutely, through more streaming services than Paramount Plus is.
Yeah.
And, you mean...
They have the Paramount name, right? Everybody knows that name from watching movies, I guess.
But that's the thing.
That's why.
But that's the thing. I think with beIN Sports, the name is tarnished. The name in this country, yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, yes... The sad truth of it is that beIN Sports probably broadcasts more soccer games than any other network, other than maybe Tudoene. And actually, it's actually even more than Tudoene. Every weekend, they've got almost all the games from France, almost all the games from Turkey, all the games from Spain. They've got Copa Libertadores, Copa Sudamericana. They've got African Nations Cup. They've got African Nations Championship. They've got a ton of content. They've got a ton of soccer coverage. And actually, I would say they have more coverage than anyone else. Maybe ESPN Plus. Maybe that's the only one that's actually, that is the big rival.
Now. Yeah, until 6 months ago, 9 months ago, beIN had more than they did. And more studio shows. They were doing really high quality stuff, but then they've started. They still have, you know, George Metallos and a few of the other top people, but most of their top people have left. Right? There's been an outflow of talent, and that's also the other thing, because I think even though they still have all this content, Chris, one of the things we've learned doing this podcast is that a lot of fans are very attached to talent and personalities. And when you have Kay Murray leave, and you have Jeremy St. Louis leave, and you have Kevin Egan leave, and you have a Matteo Benetti leave, on and on and on, people just think, okay, beIN is they're past news, they're done.
I think
even though they're still broadcasting. So
yeah.
Also the loss of talent at beIN painted a very poor picture. It is a completely tarnished name. You're correct.
I think it's more to do with actually just streaming, though, because I mean, beIN Sports Connect still exists. It's still a standalone streaming product that you can subscribe to and watch a lot of these games through. But it's still buggy. I mean, it's been buggy for years. It's gone through different versions for years. It's never been reliable. It was for a while running on Microsoft Silverlight, which most people couldn't actually play. There's been so many issues with that streaming service in this country, in the US. In other countries, it's been much, much better. So ultimately, I think that might be kind of the, almost like, not the final nail in the coffin, but is in hindsight, looking at beIN Sports and some of the mistakes that they have made, I think not having a low-cost streaming service that was reliable, that was as good as ESPN Plus, that could offer all of this content, they don't have it. I mean, they have beIN Sports Extra, which is their free streaming service, but that doesn't have the vast majority of content that they have, because that's on television. So I think at the end of the day, it's more business decisions, it's more mistakes from distribution kind of. I was going to say agreements, but a lack of agreements. And just the way that they've done business in this country has ultimately hurt them. They could have been much bigger and more successful if they played the cards right, which they did not. And hopefully they'll learn from mistakes. Hopefully they'll get more rights. Hopefully things will get better. But it just seems to be like, I mean, every 6 months there's just another, I mean, they lose something else, or somebody else acquires something that they could have acquired. Unfortunately, it just seems to be kind of step down, And we're getting closer and closer to that 2022 World Cup in Qatar, which is going to be a great opportunity for them to showcase that country and to talk about everything positive. But after that is done, after that World Cup is over, I'm not sure what's left there for beIN Sports.
So that's the consideration. You just nailed it, Chris. They are going to keep the station open until the World Cup in Qatar, because bIN is a showcase. Al Jazeera is a showcase for Qatar, right? We know this. So I think their motivation will be to keep the channel open in the United States as a propaganda tool until December of 2022. And then they may very quietly shut down. They may have lost all their rights other than the French league. And we've talked about the obvious reason why they have the French rights till 2024, and also the Qatar connection there as to why they would keep the rights until they shut the channel down. But I think that's the likely scenario now, that they play this string out till December of 22. And so that's what, another year and a half, almost 2 years, and then they shut down.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people forget that bIN Sports originally, before it launched as bIN Sports, was the Al Jazeera channel. And that was the name of it. That was kind of the working title for it. I mean, Al Jazeera, and there's nothing wrong with Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera as a 24/7 news brand has some good content. I mean, if anyone's ever kind of come across that channel, there's some good content there from different parts of the world, stories that you would never really hear much about. They do good work, but that was the original name for the network. And then they said, okay, you know what? Let's call it bIN Sports, and this is a global brand. This is a global push that they said, okay, we're going to have the name of the channel being bIN Sports. And that was like, what, I don't know, like 12 years ago now? It doesn't seem that long ago, but it was a while ago.
But I think it was 2012 when they launched in the U.S. And the assumption we knew for a while, Al Jazeera was going to put a sports network in the U.S. And they rebranded everything as bIN, their channel in France, their channel in the Middle East and North Africa, et cetera. And it was a big push. But at the same time, they opened a news channel in the United States, which did some great work and hired some of the best television journalists in the country, much like they hired great talent at bIN Sport, and they ended up having to shutter that channel eventually. Yep. In fact, they had launched that channel, I think, before they launched bIN in the U.S.
Yep.
And they had to shutter that channel. And now if you want Al Jazeera news in the U.S., you have to watch kind of the U.K. feed, right? And you can't watch it on – it's not on – they were on all the cable systems too.
Yeah.
Yeah, now you have to watch it on streaming.
Yeah, sometimes I haven't watched it in a while, but I've watched it on YouTube before, where it's like kind of a live stream. There's a history lesson about bIN Sports, and also kind of just some discussion and analysis about that network and about its current situation and some of the issues that it's had over the last several years, some of the mistakes it's made, and the position that it's in now. And I think a Paramount Plus indicates, I mean, how troubled that network is, unfortunately. All right, Kartik, we've got another big weekend coming up. We've got matches from all the way around the world, as always. What should you do, and what should the listeners do?
Enjoy your football.